1, 2, 3. Today in the studio, we'll engage the gears with one of the most innovative and influential rock bands of all time.
In the sunshine of your love.
We didn't have all this mania that exists now for the 60s. Cream was really just a little known band from England, sort of slightly less, well, in fact, a lot less known than The Who. And we weren't really aware of what we were.
Strange brew, killing what's inside of you.
I like the idea of a trio. We did toy with the idea for a while of having Steve Winwood in the band, but we decided to kind of be brave about it and just try and do it as a trio because it was different.
With tales of brave Ulysses, how his naked ears were tortured by the sirens sweetly singing.
I'm Eric Clapton with Redbeard.
I'm Jack Bruce in the studio for Cream's Disraeli Gears.
By the time Cream got together in July of 1966, Ginger Baker, Jack Bruce, and Eric Clapton were already regarded as three of the finest R&B players in England. Ironically, with all their achievements in the UK, Cream were to enjoy their biggest success on the US side of the Atlantic. In barely 2 years, Cream had left behind a legacy that is remarkable even to this day. Consider this, not only was Cream the very first rock and roll power trio, they were also the first to sell more than 1 million copies of a double album. And with Disraeli Gears, Cream successfully merged the blues with just the right amount of rock, psychedelia, leaving us with a collection of songs that were way ahead of their time. Writing on AllMusic.com, Stephen Thomas Erlewine says, Jack Bruce's flourishing collaboration with Pete Brown steers the album away from recycled blues rock and toward its eccentric British core. Yes, its psychedelic trappings tie it forever to 1967, but the imagination of the arrangements, the strength of the compositions, and especially the force of the musicianship make this album transcend its time as well. End quote. Rolling Stone magazine ranks Cream's Disraeli Gears at number 114 on their top 500 albums of all time. But Cream didn't exactly set the world on fire from the get-go. In fact, their initial release went largely unnoticed here in the States, called Fresh Cream, which meant that they had to convince their record company that they were indeed on the right track musically. Cream bass player and singer Jack Bruce explains to me in the studio.
We came to America to make this record, which eventually became Disraeli Gears. We had done some, not demos exactly. Yeah, I guess you would call them demos. But rehearsals, really, of the material that was going to become this album. As usual, I had come with like 20 songs, and Eric had 2 songs, and Ginger had 0.5 of a song. And so we did this rehearsal, and we tried a lot of stuff, including things like Sunshine of Your Love and White Room and all those songs which were to go on to become classics. But when we got to the States to record them, Amit Ertegun and all of the big wheels at Atlantic said, no, that's not happening, it's not good, it's not commercial, it won't sell, people won't like it, it's rubbish, psychedelic hogwash, I think somebody said. And they also said to me, well, and anyway, you're not the front man, you can't sing, Eric's got to be the front man. So what have you got, Eric? And Eric said, nothing. So what they did have was, what we had recorded so far was the backing track for a blues called Hey Lottie Mama. They took that away, and Felix Pappalardi and his wife wrote Strange Brew on top of that. You know, that's how that song came about. But then that's all they had. They had this one song. So they had to use my songs. But they didn't want to.
She's a witch of trouble in electric blue.
inside of you. She's some kind of demon that she didn't love to. If you don't watch out, it'll stick to you, to you. What kind of fool are you? Strange brew, killing what's inside of you.
Player Jack Bruce and drummer Ginger Baker were avant-garde jazzers, not Teddy Boy rockers like the early Beatles or the Motown mods like The Who. Jack Bruce remembers seeing Ginger Baker's drum kit for the very first time.
Well, it's very unusual. I mean, even more so then than it is now in a way, because he was playing jazz drums and he had his cymbals. Normally cymbals are kind of like an angle of 45 degrees or something. His cymbals were like straight up. I'd never seen that before. And his drums were all very flat, and he was playing some drums he had made himself, which I thought, well, I didn't know that at the time, but they looked different from most drums, and they sounded great. I mean, mostly it was, I think it was the energy and the volume that impressed me, you know, a lot of energy, a lot of presence, you know. I was very impressed, I must say. I think it was very impressive.
Jack Bruce was not, however, similarly impressed with young guitarist Eric Clapton before Cream was formed.
To be honest, we were working so hard, I wasn't really aware of anything outside of the work I was doing and getting married and things like that, you know. But I'd vaguely heard of Eric, but Ginger knew more about him. But Eric used to come down to our shows a lot. He liked the band that I was in. And we played a little bit. We had a little jam with the Yardbirds one time, and that was the first time I played with him. He was obviously a good player. You could tell that right away, but I didn't think, oh, I must play with this guy or anything. I think there was a lot of struggle at the time within the band. Eric was very ambitious, and he was trying to promote himself a bit.
With the commercial and critical success of the Yardbirds, why was Eric Clapton even available to form a band with Bruce and Baker? Here's Eric Clapton with me in the studio.
I never really counted myself as a pop musician to begin with. It was something that slipped into my life time and again, you know, that you know, I would toy with it. But it never really was a serious option to me. I mean, making music has always been a series of changes and explorations for me that have nothing to do with trend, nothing to do with saleability, really. It's really me discovering me.
I mean, you were scared about being a pop star.
With the Yardbirds.
When you left the Yardbirds?
Yeah, I ran like hell. I ran the opposite direction as fast as I could go. It scared the living daylights out of me. I could see, nightmares. No, I still do. I mean, as we talk, you know, as grown-ups, thank God, we're sitting here talking like we're having a conversation. But the idea of doing an alternative thing to this, but going on TV and, I mean, for me, the nightmare is doing a chat show, you know, because everyone knows you're there to sell your product. Everyone knows you've got to be entertaining. You're really in another world. And I
make sure you don't put your hand over the cover of the album or the book, right?
Yeah.
Make sure you don't block the cover.
All of that.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Has a beard. Running to me a crying when it throws you out. Running to me a crying on your own again. You got that pure feel, such good responses, but the picture has a mustache. You come into me with that soulful look on your face. You come in looking like you never ever done one wrong thing. That soulful look on your face. You're coming looking like you never ever done one wrong thing. So many fantastic colors I'm feeling a wonderland. Many fantastic colors makes me feel so good. Has a beard.
Originally, that song was titled She Was Like a Bearded Rainbow, a name too, I don't know, embarrassing for Jack Bruce's taste. So Cream simply called it SWLABR. That's a true story. While that's certainly not a typical way of naming songs, Cream was anything but typical. For instance, the very fact that Cream were a three-piece rock band went against the norm at that time. But that didn't matter to Cream. I asked Jack Bruce about the decision to keep the lineup simple.
You know, I always liked trios in the jazz situation before. I always liked people like Ornette Coleman, who played these pianoless quartets, which are trios. I always liked that because it's a bareness, it's a spare quality that I like, which it probably is like, I mean, if you're listening to somebody like Robert Johnson, it's just a guitar and a voice. But everything's there, the rhythm, the harmony, the melody, everything's covered. You don't necessarily need a 10-piece band to cover that. One person can do it, you know. And I like the idea of a trio. We did toy with the idea for a while of having Steve Winwood in the band, but we decided to kind of be brave about it and just try and do it as a trio because it was different. It was also exciting, the idea of just the three of us having to go out there. It's a kind of, it's a nice feeling, and we liked it.
With three strong creative minds in Cream, it seems only natural that there would be the usual amount of arguing over which songs would get recorded, especially when you remember it was Jack Bruce who was bringing in the bulk of the material. Add that to the fact that Atlantic Records wasn't exactly thrilled with the songs that Cream had written for Disraeli Gears. Here's Jack Bruce with me in the studio.
They weren't too crazy about the material. I think it also was, they thought it was too ahead of its time. I mean, White Room starts off in 5/4, which is unusual. That's a funny time for a rock and roll song to start with. They couldn't really hear the Sunshine of Your Love, which I really knew was a smash hit song. They couldn't hear it. But I remember Booker T came by one day when we were just playing that, and he said, that's a great thing. So they began to think, well, if Booker T likes it, maybe something there. So we recorded it, and Sunshine became Atlantic's biggest all-time selling single.
I'll soon be with you, my love. Give you my dawn surprise.
I'll be with you, darling, soon. I'll be with you when the stars start falling. I've been waiting so long to be where I'm going, in the sunshine of your love. I'm with you, my love, the light shining through on you.
Yes, I'm with you, my love. It's the morning, just we two.
I'll stay with you, darling, now. I'll stay with you till my seas are dried up.
I've been waiting so long to be where I'm going, in the sunshine of your
Brown through Ginger. He was actually a friend of Ginger's, and Ginger started trying to write songs with Pete Brown for Cream, but he couldn't do it. So I then took Pete Brown away. I remember we were around at my flat in Hampstead in London, trying to write some songs. It was Ginger and Pete Brown trying to write this song, which became Sweet Wine. But I just kind of got to working with Pete.
From Cream's second album, Disraeli Gears, that's one of the all-time greats, Sunshine of Your Love. When we come back, we'll find out where the title of the album, Disraeli Gears, came from. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and give us your feedback at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard. You're in the studio with Eric Clapton and Jack Bruce for Cream's Disraeli Gears.
Welcome back in the studio with Cream. I'm Jack Bruce with Redbeard.
I'm Eric Clapton with Redbeard.
Thank you, guys. In the studio for the anniversary of Cream's Disraeli Gears. It may come as a surprise, but to a prolific superstar like Eric Clapton, playing in one particular band can be like playing for a particular ball team. An album and a tour with that one band is similar to a certain season in sports, and a single song in a lifelong career like Eric's may be no more memorable than a single game. Eric Clapton was, for a long time, unaware of the impact that Cream had on rock and roll, and was truly surprised to find a reverence for Cream to this day. Take the song we heard before the break, Sunshine of Your Love, for instance.
It took a whole other series of events to bring that song back to my attention, because when I was with Cream, I was very young, and I wasn't particularly taking much notice of what was going on, to be honest with you. I was in my own little world, and just a guitar player with a rock band. The time that we existed and were working and touring, we didn't have all this mania that exists now for the 60s. Cream was really just a little known band from England, sort of slightly less... Well, in fact, a lot less known than The Who. And we weren't really aware of what we were. I mean, and I especially wasn't particularly aware of how good the songwriting was. I just was all these songs were just vehicles for me to play riffs in and play solos. And when the Cream broke up and time went by, that all, you know, was another, just to me, gone. You know, gone stuff, gone in the past. And it wasn't until I did the Letterman Show as guest of Paul Schaefer's band that the peculiarity and the niceties of that song were reintroduced to me when he said, "Look, let's do that for fun." And I heard it as if I was a complete observer, you know, very objectively listened to them play and then joined in and found that it was a great song. And I actually had to learn the words. I mean, you can believe that. I'd played that song with Cream for a year and a half, 2 years, and didn't even know what the words were, you see? So that was... That was the reason for that, and I hope as time goes by, other things will come up like that, you know, because it's not always good to play songs which you have your own series of reasons to play. It's actually nice to get inside someone else's skin and see what they like about it, you know, see what they like about it, so you can look at it afresh, really.
And winter would bring you down forever, but you rode upon a steamer to the violence of the sun. And the colors of the sea bind your eyes with trembling mermaids, and you touch the distant beaches with tales of brave Ulysses, how his naked ears were tortured by the sirens sweetly singing, for the sparkling waves are calling you to kiss the white lace lips. And you see a girl's brown body dancing through the turquoise, and her footprints make you follow where the sky loves the sea. And when your fingers find her, she drowns you in her body, carving deep blue ripples in the tissues of your mind. Tiny purple fishes run laughing through your fingers, and you want to take her with you to the hard land of the winter. Her name is Aphrodite, and she rides a crimson shell, and you know you cannot leave her, for you touch the distant sands with tales of brave Ulysses.
fishes run laughing through your fingers, and you want to take her with you to the heartland of the winter.
After Cream's debut, Fresh Cream was a less-than-robust seller. They met up with U.S. musician Felix Pappalardi and producer-engineer Tom Dowd, who had considerable success cutting soul and R&B hits on New York City-based Atlantic Records, Cream's U.S. label. Here's Jack Bruce.
Well, that was a funny situation. We'd already done our first record, which is called Fresh Cream, and it hadn't really done very well, to be honest. It hadn't got any attention. Certainly in the States, it wasn't happening. But we got a deal with Atlantic Records. We went to Atlantic Studio in New York to cut an album. And Felix happened to be there. I think Ahmet Ertegun said, you better do something with these guys. And Felix turned out, I mean, he was very useful because he, in a very subtle way, he got things out of us. It wasn't the kind of producer who says, you do this and you do that, which would have been impossible with us. We wouldn't have listened. But first of all, he got us in the same room at the same time. And him and Tommy Dowd, they were pretty open because we had these ideas that were very far, very ahead of their time, really. I mean, Tommy Dowd was used to recording people like Otis Redding, Aretha Franklin, very great people, but in a very definite form, you know, way of playing. The amplifiers would be in the studio, the same amplifiers for the bass player, the guitar player, all the time, you know, with a key that you unlocked, you know. That was the way they did it in those days. And so we came along, and we just set up our huge Marshall stacks in the studio and played loud. And they were a bit shocked, I think. This had not been done before.
The year 1967 was indeed a revolutionary time in music, art, film, literature, politics, even civil rights. For example, there's Cream's second album, its cover featuring Dayglo art, the curious title containing the surname of a former British Prime Minister, Benjamin Disraeli. Here's Jack Bruce with the inside joke on the title.
What happened was that for the first time ever, a Scotsman had won the Tour de France, which is really something. We were very proud of this guy. He's called Tommy Simpson. And he won this great cycle race, which had always been dominated by French or Italians. He won it. And then the next year he was doing it, he died on his bike. He was taking speed, he was taking amphetamines and to help him up the Alps. And I guess he took too much and his heart literally burst on the hill. And it was, you know, we were completely very saddened by this. And we were just talking about it. And it's a kind of, there's some cycle gears called derailleur gears. The roadie said, yeah, well, maybe he was using them Disraeli gears. It was like that in those days, you know. We were all crazy.
Gonna build myself a castle high up in the clouds. There'll be skies outside my window. Cruise these streets.
myself to nothing. Vanish from this place. Gonna turn myself to shadow. So
haunting, melancholy, romantic, with sublime falsetto harmony from Cream's Jack Bruce on the song Dance the Night Away from Disraeli Gears. Next, Eric Clapton and Jack Bruce, and Clapton explores the specter of pop stardom. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and give us your feedback at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard with Eric Clapton and Jack Bruce in the studio for the anniversary of Cream's Disraeli Gears.
Welcome back in the studio with Cream. I'm Jack Bruce with Redbeard.
I'm Eric Clapton with Redbeard.
Once again, thank you, gentlemen. My pleasure. The virtuosity of Cream's players, the innovation of the arrangements, the brilliant songwriting and blues jazz fire in their interpretation of roots music are all fondly recalled and missed even today. Why else would rumors of another Cream reunion be as frequent as Elvis sightings? But realize these two astounding facts on the timeline. For all of Cream's impact on rock history, it all occurred in barely a 2.5 year period. And with the exception of a one-off performance at the 1993 Hall of Fame induction, that period happened years ago. Eric Clapton has a theory about not only whether artists can create into their 60s, remember Picasso and Les Paul were just getting warmed up at age 60, but just as importantly, Clapton wonders whether the rock and roll audience will still even care. Here's Cream's Eric Clapton with me in the studio.
It's that old thing, I think comes back to that old thing, you don't miss your water till the wells run dry. And that, you know, while the people that are making these songs are contemporaries, it's not necessarily that much value attached to it. I mean, around this, you know, like the 5 or 6 or maybe 10 years after the demise of Cream, there was no value attached to this because not enough time had gone by. But then you add another 5 years, maybe 20 years to that, and people start to miss it. They actually miss that because it's to them it's gone, certainly kind of part of a dead age. And yet these people are still around, and yet I'm still around, and yet McCartney's still around, and yet Mick and Keith are still around. So as much as people, in respect of being an audience, want to know what's going on, they're starting to realize that, you know, that they miss this period, you know, that they miss the fact that there was so much spontaneity then. And yet their heroes are still around, so it's possible to stay in touch with it.
Yeah. I think the garden variety rock and roll fan realized that, though, before the creators of these things did.
Probably so.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I have extreme faith in the listening abilities of the audience and the awareness of the audience, much more than I probably ever gave credit to. And I think it's that the problem comes. I mean, we're luckier. Musicians are luckier than most other creators. We're much luckier than actors. We're much luckier than writers.
In what way?
Well, because those people work in such cut-off
isolated
circumstances, like especially film actors who are in a studio. They don't even know what the audience thinks of their work, really. They have to live on, you know, a kind of second-hand information. And writers, too, and painters don't really know. An artist on the stage, a musician on the stage, has almost a direct line of communication.
Like live theater.
Exactly.
You know whether you're bombing or
you're... You know whether you're bombing or not, and you know what's working and what they want on the night. And we're very lucky to have that. And I think that's one reason why I insist on touring all the time, is because I don't want to grow old, and I don't want to live in the past. You know, I don't want to become bitter and critical and cynical because I think all my best work was done years ago. I want to keep offering things and see how they go. If you lose your money, great God, don't lose your mind. If you lose your money, great God, don't lose your mind. And if you lose your woman, please don't fool with mine. I'm gonna buy me a bulldog, watch my old lady whilst I sleep. I'm gonna buy me a bulldog, watch my old lady whilst I sleep. 'Cause women these days, they're so doggone crooked that it might make a four-day creep. Well, you can't watch your wife and your outside women too. You know you can't watch your wife and your outside women's too. 'Cause when you're out with your woman, your wife would be at home cooking your food, doing your dirt. Buddy, what you trying to do?
American singer-songwriter John Mellencamp once told me on an edition of In the Studio that, quote, your reasons for getting in this business are not the same reasons you stay in this business. Eric Clapton contends that it's those initial reasons, then, that help determine your career longevity.
It depends, really, your reasons for getting into this in the first place have a lot to do with it. I think a lot of people who came into it as pop musicians didn't expect to be working in this business after the age of 35. They didn't expect to. And for them to be enjoying, you know, a sort of second wind is quite a surprise to them, because it's, you know, they really didn't set out to make it a life's work. I don't think they thought of it in the long term. I did. You know, I did, because...
Honestly.
I thought that I'm doing this forever, because my heroes were all old men anyway. You know, by the time I got around to ever meeting them, there were old men who were still practicing their craft. And that, to me, was the ideal. I didn't ever think of it as something I would do until I was 25 and then quit. But a lot of people did. A lot of people branched out, became businessmen in the publishing world, or became, you know, producers, or became, you know, executives in the business, staying in touch, but not necessarily playing. Well, I mean, no, they're not bad. I'm not going to say these are bad reasons. No, I mean, just to have fun would be a good enough reason.
And get paid for it.
To have fun and get paid for it and get laid and travel and all these things.
Sounds like a great job to me.
Very appealing, and not take it too seriously, see? Not take it too seriously. And then when the popularity starts to wane, you find a sort of a secure way of getting a real job, a proper job.
and Eric Clapton.
Originally on Disraeli Gears, We're Going Wrong, with Jack Bruce on vocal, Mr. Eric Clapton on guitar, Ginger Baker on drums. That brought the relatively reserved Albert Hall London audience to its feet back in 2005. I'm Redbeard, back in the studio after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my guests Eric Clapton and Jack Bruce. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2013, all rights reserved. Transcription by Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, @RedbeardRocks on Twitter, and give us your feedback at inthestudio.net